Welcome to Illinois in Focus. I'm Greg Bishop. Coming up, we'll review the week's top stories from about one major issue facing voters and taxpayers in Chicago for Tuesday's primary election, and an effort to save taxpayers some money on the non-citizen migrant health care subsidies. I'll then join the Center Square's Dan McCaleb to further discuss those stories and more. That's ahead with Illinois in Focus. I'm Greg Bishop.
Do you know what elected officials in Illinois are doing with your tax dollars? Do you want to make sure that your voice is heard? If so, then you need Blue Room Stream, a live and archived video streaming service that provides access to government meetings and events. With Blue Room Stream, you can watch how your elected officials make decisions, hold them accountable for their actions, and be a more informed citizen. Blue Room Stream is the perfect way to get involved in the democratic process and to make a difference in your community. Subscribe today at blueroomstream.com.
Welcome back to Illinois in Focus. I'm Greg Bishop. Here's some of the top stories from the past week. Chicago voters who support a proposed tax referendum may end up funding the Chicago Teachers Union instead of the homeless. Jim Talamonte reports.
CTU has campaigned aggressively in favor of the real estate transfer tax increase on properties worth more than $1 million. The purpose stated by Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson is to address homelessness. Miley Smith, Senior Director of Labor Policy for the Illinois Policy Institute, says the teachers union plans to hijack the transfer tax hike if it passes.
Internal documents indicate that it's kicking off its housing demands through Johnson's tax hike initiative. And its top demand that it listed is financial assistance for CTU members to live and work in the city.
The transfer tax referendum is on the ballot in Chicago's primary election on March 19th. I'm Jim Talamonte.
Meanwhile, the Pritzker administration is set to remove thousands of non-citizens over the age of 65 from the taxpayer-subsidized health care plan in an effort to save taxpayers millions of dollars. State agency officials announced the change during Tuesday's Joint Committee on Administrative Rules. Republican State Senator Don DeWitt expects there to be some savings, and even more, if the move includes those over the age of 42.
They're talking about 6,000 people, which, as she said, would be a savings of $14 million. And I'm sure that lower bracket of age, the lower age bracket will probably provide equal savings if they're able to move some of those folks off the migrant program.
Democratic State Senator Bill Cunningham said it's a positive development for taxpayers.
I think the department is using all the tools within their disposal to contain costs of this program. I think what they proposed today is very constructive.
The program's budgeted for $550 million, but projected costs pushed it closer to $770 million. Governor J.B. Pritzker proposed spending $629 million on the issue for the coming fiscal year that begins July 1st. Those are the top stories from the past week from Illinois. Find more online at thecentersquare.com. Coming up for Illinois in Focus, I'll join the Center Square's Dan McCaleb to further discuss the news. This is Illinois in Focus, a production of America's Talking Network. I'm Greg Bishop.
Tired of being in the dark about what happens day to day under the dome in Springfield? Do you want to be more informed in the decision-making process? If so, you need Blue Room Stream, a live and archived video streaming service that provides access to government meetings and events. With Blue Room Stream, you can watch elected officials in action, holding them accountable, and having your say on issues that matter most to you. Blue Room Stream is the perfect way to stay informed about Illinois state government and to be a more engaged citizen. Become a subscriber today at blueroomstream.com.
Greetings and welcome to Illinois in Focus, powered by the Center Square. I'm Dan McCaleb, Chief Content Officer at the Franklin News Foundation, publisher of the Center Square Newswire service. We are recording this on Thursday, March 14th. Illinois voters head to the polls Tuesday to vote in both the Democratic and the Republican primaries. While the race for president will be at the top of both primary ballots, Democrat President Joe Biden and Republican former President Donald Trump have already locked up their respective nominations. So we'll focus on Illinois-specific races. Sadly, the headline in Illinois seems to be the lack of competition up and down the ballot. Joining me today to discuss this is Greg Bishop, the Center Square's Illinois Capitol Bureau senior reporter and editor. Greg, we'll get into a couple of the contested races that some voters will see Tuesday, as well as the Bring Chicago Home tax increase referendum on the ballot in Chicago in just a moment. But let's start with this lack of competition. Why is this?
And this is always fascinating to look at, especially during primaries, which, you know, the primaries, the initial vote for the private parties to determine as to who's going to be their candidates on the general election ballot in November. So really, this is for, you know, considered the party faithful going to the polls. But I know a lot of people who take every opportunity they can to vote, especially in the state of Illinois. But when you look at what's available for voters across the state in the party primary, more than half of the available, and let's just look at the Illinois State House seats. This is the Illinois State House seats, not the judges that are in areas where it gets even less competitive, but just the Illinois State House seats. More than half of the available seats up for the election, the party's already determined. That means there is no opposing party on the primary ballot. Now, for background, Illinois' primary is only for Republicans and Democrats, so you don't have Libertarians or Independents or Green Party. They will likely or could appear on the ballot in November, but they go through a different process. But just for the Republican and Democrats, which are considered the major parties in Illinois, more than half of the seats are uncontested. In the Illinois Senate, you've got 51+% 12 of 23 races in the Illinois Senate. The winning party is already determined. In the House, 67 of 118 districts in the Illinois House, the party's already determined. And you've got a number of those districts where there's not even somebody contesting the incumbent in that party. So the word competition in Illinois' primary elections, it's hard to say that that's what we're looking at, because in a lot of these races, it's practically already determined.
Yeah, that is sad, the lack of choice for voters, you know, from downstate all the way into the capital area, up into the suburbs of Chicago and Chicago itself. That now voters in many districts will see some contested elections. Why don't we start with the 12th congressional district, perhaps the highest profile primary contest on Tuesday's ballot? That's where incumbent Republican Congressman Mike Bost of Murfreesboro takes on a former state senator and former Republican candidate for governor, Darren Belly. Tell us a little about this one.
Yeah, so the congressional seats, and one thing also, just to piggyback on what we were talking about, the lack of competition in the House seats, the maps are new. These are new maps, and they're, you know, from 2020 when they redrew that. We had an election in 2022, and now here we are in 2024. And if you look at how the Illinois Democrats drew those maps, it's fascinating to see what kinds of races ultimately do develop, because the Democrats in Illinois drew the maps, they say, in a fair way. But even, you know, outside groups looking in say that Illinois' maps get an F grade because of gerrymandering. Common Cause, an anti-gerrymandering organization, gave that failing grade because of a lack of public participation in the process of drawing those maps. But when it comes to outside of Chicago and down throughout the rural parts of the state, still considered Republican territory. And in this 12th congressional district, you have Mike Bost, who's been in Congress for years. He's a former member of the Illinois Republican House Caucus, very famous for having a budget delivered late and a stack of paper in front of him, and he's throwing paper all over the House chambers. So he's in Congress. And then you have Darren Belly, a Republican former representative, former state senator, former Republican candidate for governor against J.B. Pritzker. And he's got his own brand of conservatism. So he's challenging Mike Bost now after failing to beat the Democrat incumbent governor, J.B. Pritzker. And what's really fascinating in this race is you've got two Republicans in a primary going against each other. And the issue of migration's come up. The issue of career politicians have come up. And even the issue of Trump has come up. The former Republican president in the Republican primary for governor gave the nod to Darren Belly in 2022. And that was a pretty contested race back then, if you recall, with the Aurora mayor in that race as well for the Republicans. Yeah. So Trump gave his nod to Belly, and he ultimately got the Republican nomination for governor. But flash forward to 2024, while Boston Bailey Republicans vying for Trump's support, people thought maybe it would go to Bailey, but it didn't. It went to Bost. So it's interesting to see what kind of impact that factor is going to play here in the primary election for the 12th congressional district.
Thank you, Greg. I want to talk about one other congressional race, and that's in the 13th congressional district, where Thomas Clatterback of Champaign and Joshua Lloyd of Verdun square off in the Republican primary Tuesday for the right to take on incumbent Democrat Nikki Budzinski of Springfield. Just briefly, what can you tell us about this race, Greg?
So back to gerrymandering, the 13th district, it's an interesting drawing of a map. It looks like a river that rolls right through central Illinois. And you've got it wrapping up parts of the Metro East, going north to Springfield, then going over and encapsulating parts of Decatur and then over to Champaign-Urbana. So it kind of wraps around and picks up some of these urban areas while sweeping in some rural districts as well. And in 2022, that race was contested with Nikki Budzinski going up against Republican candidates, and Budzinski, the Democrats, won that race. Now you've got two Republicans new to politics. They are vying to get the Republican nomination to take on Budzinski, which, by the way, Budzinski does not have a Democrat opponent in that primary. So you've got Clatterbuck and Joshua Lloyd. They are going head to head, and both are bringing with them their ideas of what experience is, with Clatterbuck saying that he's worked with the Republican caucus in the Illinois Senate. He's had other government roles and even worked with Congresswoman Mary Miller's office in her district. So he feels like he has that experience. And also, being a former startup journalist and now a law student, he feels he'll bring a lot to the table. But Joshua Lloyd criticized Budzinski for being a career public worker in the government space. So you can imagine that he's gonna bring something different to the table. And he talked about the migration issue. He was forceful saying that they have to close the border, and he would ultimately want to bring that to Congress. So interesting to see these two Republicans fresh to politics in the 13th congressional district.
And to wrap up our primary preview coverage, Greg, in Chicago, a referendum on the ballot seeks to raise the real estate transfer tax on property sales of $1 million or more, with the stated purpose of using those new tax dollars, if it passes, to address homelessness. But now many are saying that if the measure in fact does pass, much of that new revenue won't go to address homelessness, but instead be directed to Chicago public schools teachers to help pay their housing bills. What's going on here?
Yeah, much like Trump and whether or not he was going to be on Illinois' ballot, the Bring Chicago Home referendum was also back and forth on the ballot. This is a resolution that Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson has been pushing for. And after denying Chicago voters the chance to sound off on whether to have sanctuary city status with a non-binding resolution, the city council did not allow for that to get on this primary ballot. But they did allow for a binding resolution that would essentially increase taxes on real estate transfers over $1 million. Being called the Chicago Bring Chicago Home Fund, the mayor says that would help combat homelessness in the city of Chicago. But as he brought it forward, you had complaints in the courts from a variety of different groups, and it was ultimately found to be not on the ballot by the district courts. And then in short order, an appellate court said, no, it's back on the ballot. And just recently, the Illinois Supreme Court denied hearing an appeal of that decision. So it is on the ballot. But when you look at some of the ongoing relationships within City Hall, which, by the way, in Chicago is the only jurisdiction in the state of Illinois where the city runs the school district, the rest of the state, you have school boards that are independently elected. And while Chicago's in range of getting an independently elected school board, still is the case that the city of Chicago is the one that ultimately manages the Chicago school district. And the relationship that Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson has with the Chicago Teachers Union It's very well documented. He used to work with the Chicago Public Schools. He got massive support from the Chicago Teachers Union and financial support. And now here's the mayor pushing for this Bring Chicago Home ordinance, which would increase taxes. And he says for homelessness. But apparently there are conversations in behind closed doors that have been found in documents provided to the Illinois Policy Institute, to where the Chicago Teachers Union, with their new contract, are looking to get some kind of assistance for public school teachers to live in Chicago. And the question of whether the Bring Chicago Home tax funds would be used for such a thing, that's got people kind of scratching their head.
Yeah, and as I understand it, Greg, while Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson says any new revenue generated from this new tax, if the referendum passes, would go to homelessness, the referendum itself does not restrict it specifically to that. Though theoretically, Johnson and the city council could use the money however they see fit, even though they're now telling taxpayers that it is for homelessness. Just brief response there.
Yeah, and will Chicago voters support this? In the city council meetings that I've seen recently, you've got members of the public who are allowed public comment at the beginning of the meetings. And one in particular got up and said that they are not going to be supporting the Bring Chicago Home Fund. And we'll see what comes out of election night. But also one thing to note, Dan, with our elections in Illinois, it takes 2 weeks to get the results.
No doubt about it, unfortunately. One last comment on this from me, Greg. It's important to note, too, it's a surtax on essentially sales of property over $1 million. We're not just talking about mansions, multimillionaire. This is going to affect small business too. But let's move on, Greg. Last year, the state legislature approved and Governor Pritzker signed a new law that limits where lawsuits challenging state laws can be filed, to Sangamon and Cook counties. That was challenged in court, and a judge this week ruled it unconstitutional. Tell us more about this.
So when we saw this story pop up a year ago, where the legislature was debating and ultimately passing a law that says that anyone in the state of Illinois that challenges the constitutionality of a state statute can only bring lawsuits in Sangamon County and Cook County. Sangamon County is the seat of government where Springfield is. Cook County encompasses Chicago, not any of the other 102 counties where they have district courts with judges that are locally elected. And ultimately, the supporters of this, they said, the attorney general only has so much time and can't be in all of these counties at once. And this will help make things more efficient for judicial expediency to take care of these issues in an expeditious way in either Sangamon County or in Cook County. Again, not in any of the other 102 counties across the state of Illinois. Even when this was being debated with Democrats supporting it, Republicans, they said that this takes away the ability from people to go to a court in their backyard with judges that the people around them elect to have their cases heard when they're challenging not just state statutes on constitutional grounds, but also the executive orders that... Just a reminder, Dan, remember 3 years plus of COVID with the executive orders there were, everything from, wear a mask to you can only have three people on a boat to, a variety of other different types of orders, right? So this law would say that you can't sue a state statute or an executive order except in Cook and Sangamon County. What that does for people down in Cairo, southern Illinois, would they have to travel to Sangamon County? These were the types of questions that had ultimately Republicans voting against it, saying this is, quote, tyrannical. So the governor signed it. It became law. There are pending federal lawsuits against this, but one state lawsuit that was brought by Piasaw Armory down in the Metro East area in Madison County, they were challenging the constitutionality of the state's firearm industry liability law. This was a law that says firearm makers and industry advertisers, they could be held liable for their products. So the firearm industry was suing, and in Madison County, the state requested to move the case to Sangamon County. Give or take, you're talking about an hour and a half drive from roughly where I believe this is at to get to Sangamon County. But the judge in this case, after reviewing what the state had to say in defense of the change of venue to comport with the venue limit law that the state passed, the state had said, well, hey, you know, we've got the Zoom option, the video conferencing option. And if the plaintiff in this case can't travel to Sangamon County, then they can just video conference in. The judge, when he said that as applied, this law in this case is unconstitutional, said the same goes for the state. They can zoom in to a hearing in Madison County. So it was interesting to see that, but Governor J.B. Pritzker being asked this week about that judge deeming the law unconstitutional as applied in this case, he said this was all about making sure people aren't venue shopping, to make sure that, you know, the judges in Sangamon and Cook County that the governor believes deal with more constitutional type cases. He says he felt it was better for those, but he also said he expects this to go through the courts. We'll be watching this closely, a fascinating law that has a lot of criticism, and we'll see just where this particular case out of Madison County goes.
In the few minutes we have left, let's talk about some updates this week regarding the migrant crisis embracing Chicago and really the rest of the state. One of those updates is that the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, they're sending a team to Chicago to help contain a measles outbreak at one of the migrant shelters in the city. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so the state, of course, being the recipient of more than 35,000 non-citizen migrants coming to the state in just about a year and a half, if not more, it's raised a lot of humanitarian questions about, not just the potential human trafficking and the crime and the drugs with a porous border. But you also have the concern of health. And with the migrant shelters that there are in Chicago, there have been stories for months about the conditions in some of these shelters not being enough to keep up hygiene and a variety of other things, even stories about shortages of diapers. But now this week, we've got an indication of at first one case of measles in a child, then a second case, and then it was four cases, and now eight cases. I imagine you're going to see that number increase. But Governor J.B. Pritzker asked what the state's doing about this situation. He said that he was the one that called the White House to get the CDC to get with Chicago Public Health and Cook County Public Health and the State Department of Public Health to make sure that they're on the ground overseeing how they're handling this. But they're also pushing a vaccination effort, and a lot of people get measles vaccines when they're young. But apparently the governor indicated that a lot of these migrants that came to Chicago refused to get measles vaccines. Now there's a push to get these vaccinations in. So we'll see just how this plays out on the humanitarian side. It's clearly, heartbreaking to see that type of story. But then you've got the financial aspect, and that financial aspect, the state legislature is continuing to deal with as the governor looks to increase funding for migrant care and also the non-citizen healthcare subsidies that the state manages right now, the taxpayer subsidized healthcare subsidies. There are some efforts underway to try to shore up those costs, but even if they try to move 6,000 seniors off of taxpayer subsidized healthcare, they could save $14 million. Dan, it's still going to cost hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars just for that program.
Plenty more to talk about, Greg, but we are out of time. Thanks for joining us today. Listeners can keep up with these stories and more at thecentersquare.com.